And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 221. Today, I have another simulcast episode. This is Silas Lindenstein of Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Today, I'm presenting to you a interview with Xenia LeBlanc for the movie The Exposed. I did this interview for my other podcast, You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, but I know I got a lot of listeners here, and I want you to get this too. She's a filmmaker, so she's on both. So that's the treat. If you're a filmmaker, you get to be on both of these. And So let's do it. I'm gonna drop it in so you can listen to this episode. And so be sure to subscribe to both shows just in case. So you don't miss one. And then, so you don't, accidentally listen to it twice. Not that you shouldn't, because it's great. I'll prove it. Listen right now.
You're watching a movie with Silas.
Today, on You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, I am interviewing writer, director, Xenia LeBlanc. And we're talking about her new short film, The Exposed. I've got another filmmaker who, coincidentally, is also married to my last guest. I guess it depends on the order you're doing this, but Nicholas Acosta. They're both married and they're both filmmakers. And I ask about that, how that is. So listen to the answers there in case you are. Are you a couple of artists together pursuing the same thing? Does it work for you? I don't know. My first wife, She liked to dabble in the arts as well as me. And notice I said first wife. So you know how that worked out. My current wife, wife number two, my last wife, I will say, as well. She's not really into the performing arts. So it's been smooth. So we'll see. We'll see if it works for you. Congratulations. Anyway, Xenia is a wonderfully interesting woman. She's lived all over. She's studied acting all over, and I think she came up with a great little premise for this short film. It's a you'll hear me talk about it. It's a little nerve wracking of a little horror film. So, but it's not like a grotesque horror. So I think you can handle it, even if you don't normally like horror. I'm going to have a link for that movie on both you'rewatchingamovie.com for under the show notes and also in, on Black and a Half on the show notes. So, check that out so you can watch the movie and then it's like a 5-minute horror. So really well done. You know, I do. If you follow this program, you know I participate in the 48-hour film project with it, which is always 3 to 7 minute. I believe it's 3 is the minimum, maybe 4, and 7 minutes in length. So I'm really into that kind of short film. And she did this for a particular festival, but now it's released everywhere. So check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. And I think you'll really enjoy this interview. I got a feeling. So right now, sit back, relax, open your heart and open your ear holes and listen to this episode. 7 questions with Xenia LeBlanc.
You're watching a movie with Silas.
First of all, thank you for coming here.
Thank you.
Xenia. Yes. I had the pleasure of interviewing your other half. I don't know if he was so excited that he told you about this.
Nick,
it's a very, is it strange having, is it good having two filmmakers in a household?
It's very interesting. It's definitely really cool to have a partner that, you know, does the same thing as you.
Yeah.
Because we understand each other, we help each other creatively. So I think it's really amazing that we're both in the same field. Mm-hmm. It can get a little bit competitive.
That's what I was wondering.
But in a good way, I feel we have been, you know, working on many different projects together. So we kind of figured out how to navigate it. So like we have, it's not really a rule, but it's something that we do where we make one film when one of us directs and then the other film is the other person will direct. So we'll be like, okay, right now this is you directing your film.
Okay.
And we're for you and we're helping you to achieve your vision. And then the next one is mine. So I get to direct and I get to choose and do, you know, what I want to do with it. So that worked so far.
Now I first discovered you as an actor. Mm-hmm. You were in the Pickup, that short film, The Pickup.
Yep.
Right. Is he in The Exposed?
Yes, he actually is. So he is,
a face that I can't see. Is he a face that I can't see? I don't want to spoil.
You can see a little bit of his contour. It's that video when Mike Tizzy is showing like that there have been break-ins in the area.
Okay.
We have this on our Blink camera. So he plays like the breaking guy. So he's wearing like, you know, something dark and like, yeah, you kind of see his silhouette, but you can't see his face. Yeah.
Well,
He's also the voice that says, "What do we got?" at the end, to which the character responds. So so he is a little bit, his spirit is in there.
Okay. Now very different is The Exposed, is horror, I would call it, it's horror, right?
It is.
Fear inducing. Is that your style more? Is this what you're really into?
Honestly, I think what I'm more excited about and what I'm more into in the past have been comedy more so. So I've been very much focused on comedy, especially female-based comedy and female-driven comedy, I would say. So I was part of Dances with Films in the past. Unfortunately, it was 2020. So my series... Mm-hmm. Yeah, female driven comedy series. They got in, but we had to do the Zoom red carpet and all that stuff. Really sad. So I think comedy as well as documentary is something that I'm really like. I edited a documentary film recently, a feature documentary. It's going to be released in October through streaming platforms, which is really cool. So I think I've been kind of trying out different things, and horror for me as a genre is very interesting because it's something that you can do literally in one location with, you know, actor. And if you're good at figuring out how to create tension and how to create fear, you can do something really cool with very little. So, you know, you don't need a lot of dialogue. You don't really need to do much. You can just visually create an atmosphere with using sound and light and the location and then one actor, and then there you go. So I think this for me was kind of a challenge. So as it is, it's funny. So The Exposed was made for a short contest. There's a short contest happening every year. It's made by Jacob Owens. So Jacob Owens is a filmmaker. He does like a bunch of different things. He's very much in love with horror. He does a lot of really cool horror shorts himself. And then, you know, he makes this contest every year. So this past year, this contest included they're like building something downstairs. Of course, when I'm doing the interview, there's like a construction going on. So they basically said that the rules this year were you cannot use any CGI or visual effects, which is great because I'm not really into visual effects or CGI.
Mm-hmm.
So then you cannot... use like anything beyond a tripod and a handheld camera. So everything had to go back to basics.
Okay.
And then, yeah. So that was a cool challenge for me because I was excited to kind of see what we can create within such little time and like just this limited availability of things. So that made us very, very creative. And then you had to involve a mask in a creative way, which...
Okay.
Mask in the I don't want to reveal like the reveal at the end. And then you basically had to use a frame from a famous horror feature film, like a classic horror film. So I used one from Psycho. So it's the Psycho. So yeah, so that's why
a copycat video, like
actual like frame. So we analyzed the frame from Psycho when he's, you know, in the shower, including the light and how he's holding it and everything. So we like created exactly the same frame when, you know, he comes in the door. So yeah, so that's that was a challenge for me. So that's why I made this horror film from the beginning, but also because I have an amazing actress and I wanted to work with her. And I was like, okay, let's make this happen. So
how long did you have to write it? Like, was it like how long from writing to finishing?
Just a couple of, honestly, I wrote it in like 3 days. And then we just went back and forth on a couple of moments just to see, you know, how the tension works, how those moments hit, like, and everything. So,
but like the due date, what was the due date from when you found out about it to having to submit it?
So for me, so I think it was a couple of weeks, maybe a month, but I had to go on a trip. So I had to film it literally as soon as I found out, pretty much wrote it the next couple of days. And then we shot it like the following week. And then I went on a trip because I went back to Europe. So in Europe, I went and edited it on my laptop. I was editing on the plane as I was doing it. So I don't recommend editing on the plane.
It sounds tense. Sounds tense.
Yeah.
Hopefully you weren't editing audio while there. That sounds.
I actually record a couple line of my family. So my brother, he records, he does sound design for video games. So he's really good at like, he has a little station. So I recorded my mom. So there's like a little, you know, muffled scream in there. So I recorded my mom because I needed something. I was like, Mom, do you want to be in the movie? She's like, yeah, I'm going to do it. So
I mean, I got to say, this was very, I'm surprised you're not like the big horror person, because I mean, I found the very beginning very frightening. Very good job of fear inducing. I felt like you tapped into this basic fear of being alone when, like, it reminded me of, like, I go and see, you know, a movie like A Quiet Place, and then I come home and I'm like, whoop, I'm jumping around. And that you grabbed right away into that horror element, that fear.
No, I love horror. I think for me, I'm very much into like highbrow horror. So, you know, like the Conjuring movies, oh my God, they're like my favorite movies ever. So I think I am very much into horror, but it's not something that I'm like pursuing as a genre. I think it was something like, for me, if there's a good story, which this was the case, I'll develop it in whichever way. So for me, this was exciting just because the story was coming together and I was like, oh my God, I really want to do this. And I want to try out something that would scare me. And somebody actually asked me at the film festival when we premiered at Dances with Films, they asked me like, oh my God, they asked me, why did you like, what made you think of this whole scenario? And I said, well, as a kid growing up in Russia, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
I actually can't hear it.
You can't hear it?
No, it's not coming through. Yeah. Oh,
maybe it's like, you know, not like
there's Zoom has a good filter, I've discovered. Okay. Like, yeah. Okay. So perfect. I have no idea.
And
it looks like you're being spooked by a ghost right now because we can't see it. Yeah.
Wait, hold on. I need to talk right now. Yeah. Okay, great. Then that's perfect. So yeah, so as a kid, I used to watch this show. I don't know if you remember, it's like an American show. We got it in Russia when I was growing up called 9/11 or whatever. 9/11. 9/11,
yeah.
Right? A real realistic show. They show like these things where there's a call and they go,
yeah, Rescue 911. I remember that.
Rescue 911. So yeah. Ours was just called, like, they just translated it as like call 911 or something like that.
Yeah.
So the thing that freaked me out the most, I was like maybe 7 years old and I watched this episode about like a house fire, you know, and they kind of talked about how that happened. And like the people, I think one person died and then they got it. And I freaked out because I thought, okay, there's all these things out there that, you know, could scare me, ghosts, or there's like, I don't know, things that I could imagine, like different forces or evil forces. But the scariest thing is something that is real. And this is real. Like the fire that actually killed someone in the house was real. So I thought about that and I thought like, oh my God, what scares me? And that scares me more than, say, ghosts or supernatural elements. So I thought, like, this is what I want to incorporate and explore in this film.
Well, it's very relatable, right? Like, I mean, it's something that you literally feel like, oh, that could happen to me. this little accident. I'm a stay at, like, I stay at home. I work from home. I stay at home and by myself most of the day. The other day I realized when I was doing an audition, because I do a little acting. I'm in this podcast studio I have, and I was yelling during the audition, and I went out and apologized to my family, said, sorry if I disturbed you yelling. And they're like, well, we couldn't hear you. And I was like, oh, well, that's frightening.
Yeah, because like, if something happens and you
crap. So I better put an intercom in here or something.
Do you have like an isolated studio or
kind of? Yeah, it's in a garage, like kind of. But I thought I could. I didn't know it was that thin. You know, I didn't know it was that thick. So I'm like, okay, well, no for myself. So maybe that might have hit a little for me too with this film, this quiet isolation. Yeah. But I think those real terrors are really great. And I thought you did
they're much scarier. And to me, this is something that I was thinking about when I was creating this, is there's so much that can frighten someone, but everyone can experience something like this. It can happen to you without you noticing. Like, you can literally get affected by something and not notice because you weren't careful with something, or you weren't, you know, I just don't want to reveal the ending of it, but that to me is so realistic. And I thought, oh my God, this is, and when they asked me at the film festival, so why'd you make this? I said, oh my God, I think I realized, cause I watched those 9/11 series. Yeah. And it just freaked me out. And I remember my mom was so mad. She's like, who let you watch this? And after that, I was always like checking everything is okay. I still do that. So when I leave,
gosh, house, my wife every night, did I turn this off? Did I turn that off? Did I unplug the tone? I'm like, yeah. Like, and so honestly, she does not like horror, right? But I would show her a ghost film before I would show her this, because this will just impound her fears of that. This is why, see, and it's real, and I can't go, well, it's not real, like a ghost, right? I go like, oh, she will freak out at this film.
Oh my God. Yeah, my mom did. She watched it and she was like, oh God, why, this is terrifying.
Also, I really love that this was the requirements you said that were in there, that you had to do certain things, because I'm involved every year and twice a year in this the 48-hour film projects with a group.
Nice.
And so I'm in love with the idea of putting requirements on films and having to get creative. I always believed when I was a theater director, there was a guy who wrote a book named William Ball, who said, well, necessity is the mother of invention. Restrictions are the mother of creativity.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah. So, I think I need some of my best work, you know, following some rules, or if you give me like specifics, the scene, writing a scene. I remember when I studied at New York Film Academy, we were like writing scenes at the screenwriting course, and they would say to us, it needs to end with this, and it also needs to involve this line. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool, because I know exactly where I'm going to go with this, or what kind of ideas I have with this. And it's also, it kind of forces you to be more creative. So I'm totally with you on that.
Where you just said you studied, I noticed something. You graduated from Queen Mary University of London.
Yes. Yeah. I studied film there, film studies. But I studied film also. The first time I came to the U.S. was for the New York Film Academy here in L.A. So I came to do a filmmaking course, I think. And then I went on to doing a screenwriting course.
So you weren't from London originally?
No, I'm from Russia, St. Petersburg.
Okay. So I had, because I was like, why would someone come from England to study acting in the U.S.? That seems backwards. they steal all of our jobs. So they get all the acting job. I've been to St. Petersburg.
No way.
Yes. When back in, it was 1988.
Wow.
1989, February of 89. My high school went on a trip. Gorbachev was in power.
I was gonna say, this is still
it was with the K,
Yeltsin,
Yeltsin. And so we went over and visited Moscow. We went down to Tbilisi when Georgia was still part of, because I went to the USSR, right? So, and then we flew up to, at the time, Leningrad.
Leningrad, that's where I was.
Yes. Yes. And so our last days were in St. Petersburg. I remember going around because we had to, somebody asked me to bring back sheet music. They're a musician, like, bring me back actual Russian sheet music. And so I went out to a store to find them. And so I have pictures of that. I remember it being a very beautiful, beautiful city.
It's beautiful.
And yeah, like, and it's one of my claim to fame, because I'm like, I don't meet a lot of other people who can say they've been to St. Petersburg. I haven't. Like,
that's really impressive to me, because most people have never been to Russia. So when I hear this, I'm like, wow.
It was hard as a high schooler, food wise.
Because
we were not, like, we did actually go to the first McDonald's that ever opened in Moscow.
Yeah.
Now, before we left, I had said there's no way I was going, because that was ridiculous. I would not go to another country and eat McDonald's. And but then we were like, we waited an hour and a half in the snow to get in there, because we were so like, we need regular food. To us, it was
normal food.
It's funny, because we were eating in a hotel, so it should have been like, we should have been happy with that. But some of the best food I had in Georgia, we had some good bread, some fabulous bread, amazing bread from Stone Ovens. And then in London, up in St. Petersburg, I like, that felt more just, I don't know. They said it was a more, at the time, Western area. Like, I didn't have any food issues there, so we were all fine. I don't know if we just adjusted and go, like, get over your American self, teenagers, obnoxious 15-year-olds.
That we went to Russia, I think, before the pandemic. It was like 2019. So we went there and he was like trying to adjust certain things. For example, we have these breakfast sausages, and he's like, this is not a sausage. It's just boiled, like, sausage that we just boil.
Yeah.
And then he goes like, this is, I don't know what this, hot dogs, said hot dogs. And he goes, this is not a hot dog. This is like a weird whatever. But there were a lot of things like that. Like, you know, he was trying to find like cold drinks. We're not that big on cold drinks. I know it sounds ridiculous, but
no, I remember the pasteurized irradiated orange juice that I was drinking. Oh. It was not cold. It was just warm orange juice.
It's like an American habit here. I've learned to be like, oh, I want some ice with my water. Like, we don't do that. So he was so pissed, because we'd go somewhere and they'd give him a Coke or something. They're like, it's not cold. They go, yes, it is. He's like, no. So yeah, so I get you. It's foreign. It's a cultural shock. It's completely
little things that you don't think about until you're there. And as a teenager, I'm sure I was intolerable. I mean, at least I was with a group. So
no, but at least you were lucky there was a McDonald's at the time you went.
One time to get us.
It opened. I forget which year it was that it opened, but I think it was.
Well, it was like 88. It only been open like a 6 months.
Yeah,
I think
when
we've been there.
New. And then we had Carol's. Do you have Carol's here?
I don't know Carol's. It might have been a thing before.
It was like the same thing as McDonald's. They also had Happy Meals, but they were called Carol's as opposed to McDonald's. They were open just for a little bit and then they like closed. And that's what I remember. And Nick is like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, that was a chain. It was like a chain. And I looked it up. It didn't last too long. Got bought out.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the U.S. has so, at that time, before we were so social media has made everything so small.
Yeah.
Like, there were chains that people had never, I remember introducing my friends to Taco Bell when it came out to the East Coast, because they were like, they had never heard of Taco Bell. And I'm like, what? Are you nuts? I've been from California.
Right.
The first time I have people come on the show, I always ask, there's seven questions I always ask them.
Okay.
It's the Silas Sonnenstein's world famous seven questions. And then one day there'll be a graphic. Right then, it'll be very exciting. So my seven questions. Number one, what are you most nerdy about? And not meaning it doesn't have to be Star Trek or Star Wars, but what's that thing that you just love, you deep dive into, that that you know maybe more than a lot of people?
So I think there's two besides film. Is reading, for sure. Like, okay. I'm book nerd. Like, I love to read, especially like sci-fi, and I absolutely love like a good thriller. So that's I'm super excited about. So I can recommend like really good stuff. And I would say second would be cooking. Cooking is something I'm super nerdy about. So I love to cook and I love finding new flavors, combining them, like creating cool recipes and then like trying something out that, you know, has not been in the recipe book and just experiment with that and then let people try it and like see how they react to that. So I think besides film, so if you said like not film.
Is there a cuisine that you're more into? Like certain?
I think all of them have like, there's a lot. So I love French cuisine. It's like the staples of like good food that, you know, involves a lot of butter. But I absolutely love Italian food, Asian food. Like I love fusion as well. So if you can like combine a bunch of different recipes from different cuisines, that's something that I'm super, super passionate about. I love that stuff.
I got into food more during the pandemic. I've always liked food, but it gave a chance to take time and learn, you know, when we're isolated. And like I last night we did a simple thing where my wife has become allergic to regular dairy, so we've just been doing goat cheese, you know. So we found that we have this boxed mac and cheese that's a goat cheese, right? And I'm like always like, but last night we mixed two different kinds, so it was like a mix of cheese, and then I looked up and found that prosciutto was the best meat to go with goat cheese.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So I'm like, well, let me try it. So we fried it up and crumpled it up and threw it in there. And this was the best goat cheese mac and cheese we've ever had.
Whoa.
And then a side of strawberries, because strawberries was the recommended fruit to go with.
Absolutely.
Goat cheese. So
I have an issue with goat cheese because I had, so it's like a long story, but in short, when I was a kid growing up in Russia, I used to play with a goat. It was a goat that belonged to our neighbors and it was like my best friend. I was so happy. And then one day I came to pick up my friend from her house because she wasn't coming out, and I entered the, you know, Russian houses, they have this little area that's in front of the house where you leave your shoes. It's kind of like a step up kind of thing.
Yeah.
So her grandmother was slaughtering the goat, because they're farmers. They were, you know, this goat, it was its time, and the smell of that. And also I saw the buckets with like, you know, the insides and everything. So after that, I can't eat goat cheese. And it's like on a psychological level, because that
but goat cheese doesn't kill the goat. The goat's still,
I know, but it's
alive.
It was the smell, though. It was like something psychologically. Yeah. And it's funny because I would eat and try different stuff. And Nick's making fun of me because I'll eat, like, there was an ice cream in New York and they made it out of goat's cheese. And I was eating it fine. And then my friend goes, she's like, do you know this is goat's cheese? And of course, automatically.
Oh, you'd lost it.
I can't. Oh, but no, it's really good and like amazing. And the pairing, I've tried this pairing before. I would still like take the effort to try it and at least like, you know, go for it, because I don't want to miss out on the flavor. But yeah, when you said goat cheese, I was like, oh God.
I'm definitely more, I like it now. I it was always okay, but now I just have it so much because that's what's there for us. But all right, number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Love to eat?
Yeah.
I would say a couple of things. So recently I started trying vegetarian food more because I was really excited about different pairings, and I found this whole new world of flavors that didn't exist to me before, because, you know, we always go for meat and then you have a little like potato or something with it.
Yeah.
But in vegetarian cuisine, there's so many interesting things that people have come up with. So, first of all, pasta. I'm super, super passionate about pasta of all kinds. But the pairings of like, you know, I'm super excited about different interesting pairings of like sweet potato with, you know, different baked vegetables. Okay. I know it sounds very boring, but there are so many ways to cook a sweet potato that can be like just super exciting. You can make like dumplings with it. You can fry it, you can like boil it. There's so, you can actually make like I lived in Montreal for a little bit, for 1 year. I'm not going back. It's really cold over there. But in Montreal, they're very passionate about their food. So I took like one class with the Cordon Bleu, like there was one class that they opened for the public. And I took it and they made like mashed potatoes with sweet potato. And that was my first time trying it. And I was like, oh my God, the sweet potato is like this new flavor. So I think I'm like a sweet potato nerd. Cause after that I was like, oh my God, it's such a completely different flavor, but it's so tasty and like unique as opposed to just regular mashed potatoes. So I would say, yeah, that and also Asian food. Like I absolutely love sushi. Sushi is like our treat. We always go to Larchmont. There's like a really great sushi place there. So yeah, sushi and pasta.
I remember Nick saying that.
Oh, he sushi. Did. Yeah. That's place. Like the other day, we're like, I haven't been there in a while. I was like, yeah, let's go get some sushi. So yeah. Fish.
I'm going to try sweet potato dumplings now that you said that, because we're also big sweet potatoers here. So I'm like, I've never heard of that. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to look that up tonight. I can try. Yeah. I'm trying that this week. Okay.
Absolutely. That's really cool.
All right. Number three, what's something you love to drink?
Kombucha. I love kombucha. So when I first tried it, I was like, is this really something? It's like, I think it's an acquired taste. And the fact that, especially in America, because it's not a very European drink, like to drink kombucha, but the fact that you can make it yourself. And also there's so many different flavors that came out in the past couple of years. So you go and there's like, we have a store nearby and it has like this whole selection of different kombucha. So that
I'm from Seattle. We have more kombucha than we have homeless. Like So, I mean, it's so much. It's I've only had it once, and I'm like, yeah, it's an acquired taste for sure.
It's something that, you know, over time just gets better and better. And like Nick hates it. I tried to make him like try something, and every time a different flavor, he's like, I don't know how you can drink it. But it's something that just always refreshes me, and it's just there's so many different things you can do with it, and it's good for you. So for me, it's like, oh gosh, it has all these three things in it that I'm super excited about. So that, as well as wine. I'm a wine nerd. So that's another thing, because I'm European, but it's something that my family has always been drinking at dinner. And like, there's so many different flavors, and I love that California has so, you know, so much access to all these vineyard places. So that's something that I'm super excited about as well.
So does Washington. If you ever out this way, I can take you to some wine. Yeah, I'll take you two to some wineries. You come up here. Come up here and shoot a movie.
That'd be great.
I'll audition. Number four. What kind of music do you love?
I love electronic music. I love jazz. I listen to all kinds of different music. Sometimes it's going to be like soundtracks. We have a huge collection of soundtracks that we have saved, and like mine is on Apple Music, on iTunes. So, I think all kinds, but my favorite go-to is jazz and electronic, like, you know, they used to call it lounge music in like early 2000s, but lounge music to me sounds more like something that plays in the elevator. I'm talking more about like very interesting artists like, you know, Moby, for example, who is actually our neighbor. I've met him a couple of times. So I grew up listening to his music, like Fatboy Slim, you know. So I think I can't say like I listen to only one particular kind of music. I think it depends on, you know, the artist or like the if it's a cool song from like, so many soundtracks that we have saved and that we listen to over and over again, like, you know, even John Williams, like we listen to him sometimes, like it's a Saturday, I'll just put on John Williams albums and just listen to it. But yeah, it's like, it depends on my mood, but I think, I love all kinds. I love finding new music too. So I'll listen to like iTunes radio and then just kind of pick up on some stuff that I haven't heard before. So, yeah.
I like it. I mean, you're inspiring me. Maybe I'll just throw some John Williams on while I cook.
My gosh, it like transforms your space, your
gives
mind.
Give some intensity.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Sorry, number five. What do you love to create?
Oh, movies. I love visual arts and I love telling stories. So I think that's why, you know, I chose filmmaking, because it combines a bunch of different art forms. I don't know any other art form that combines that many things into under one umbrella. So if you're making a film, you can literally be a good visual storyteller. You can, you know, be actual like cinematography and be into that. You can also be you have to be a good storyteller. So you could be a good writer. You need to write and learn how to tell good stories. You can perform, you can, you know, create the character with your behavior and different moods and emotions. So I think there's so many things, but for me, I'm also very much into photography. So I take a lot of photos. It's something that is just my passion. It's something that I do with friends of mine. I've done a bunch of photo shoots in the past. So photography, video, I'm not a good painter, but I'm actually working on a little short. I've been working on it forever. I started like way before the pandemic, where I'm like dabbling into animation. It's like a story that happened to me in San Francisco. And then I just found out there's this app that you can download on the iPad that allows you to draw, like, you know, onion skin draw. Like, it's basically like helps you to create your animation and then save them in different layers so you can animate them later. It is super complicated for my brain, but I was like, okay, I want to give it a try. So I've been working on that, and it's going well. So we'll see. Maybe I'll finish it in the next 5 years. Yeah.
All right. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
A game. Ooh. So we love like board games, and like we love the game night. So we play a bunch of those, like guess the movie, or like somebody gave us those cards recently where it like says, you know, you have to describe what the film is or what's going. It's kind of like the Ellen.
Heads up.
It's kind of like that, but it's more complicated. You're limited by time and you can only use it. So yeah, so it's like it's a level up from that, but it's a similar kind of thing.
Okay.
So I love those. We love those competitive, like super fast games. But also, I come from a little bit of a gaming background. So my father opened the first gaming company in Russia back in the 90s. So
wait, was he the Tetris inventor?
No.
Okay. No. All right. I just saw that movie. So. Okay.
No, he. Yeah, it's a great film. Actually, I haven't seen it yet, but I want to check it out. No, he opened a first gaming company that was working with, like, you know, the American companies. They were creating different things for them. For example, they worked with Doom and they created like the gun like elements for them. So they were working with many different companies at the time. They created their own game that was like, it's a racing game, but it's the little cars, like the radio controlled cars. So they created a whole game, which was actually sold in America at the time. And my dad came here to present it and all this stuff. It was really cool. So, because of my horror excitement and all this stuff, I love spooky games. So I don't know if you know, this phenomenal game called Fatal Frame. It's a Japanese game. It's basically like every, new episode is its own story. But the first one begins, you're just in the middle of the woods and your sister ran away and you're just, there's no clues. You're in the middle of the woods and it's dark. And so you have to like go through and like figure things out, and then you find a camera. And so now you figure out that you're in a haunted village and your sister has been, you know, possessed by these ghosts. So your only weapon against them is your camera with a flash. So it's called Fatal Frame. So depending on how you frame it, like the more flash will hit them and like kill them.
Okay. So
that is such, I think they actually made a movie based on that game. I'm not sure, but it's just visually stunning. So I love like video games that are visually stunning and have like a good story. So in that, it's really exciting.
Have you tried playing a horror game in VR?
No, but I really want to, but I'm kind of scared.
I have Resident Evil. They had the VR mode, and I made it 10 minutes and I was so scared of this thing. I was freaked out. I couldn't go back to it. I was so scared.
So you play the
game. It's the regular mode, but you hit VR and then it throws you into the VR mode. So you're just doing the game from first person, like the thing, but you can look, you're in it. You're looking around. You have the controller, but you're open. Every time you open the door or something, I mean, you're just close to everything. It was the scariest thing I'd ever done. Maybe it was 20 minutes. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't go do it again. I was like, no, I didn't even play the game on regular. I was too freaked out by it. So I'm like, I'll play Star Wars, whatever. Okay.
Listen, that game that I was telling you about, remember those like places, they still do it. I think the PlayStation controller just shakes, you know, when things are coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
was enough. Like, if you're talking about the VR and like playing that game in VR,
it still shakes. The PlayStation still shakes, and you're holding it, and you're around everything. So yeah, it was just too much. Oh my gosh, coming crazy.
But see, that's cool.
But try it; you might like it. Yeah. Okay. Last question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Honestly, and it's going to sound very deep and philosophical, I've always been passionate about trying to help people or introducing people to a new perspective, to something they have not thought of before or considered or looked at. Like, I would want to leave behind stories, be it through film or even writing stories that change people's perspective. And I'm not talking about just politics or, the way of their life. I'm saying things that leave a mark and in minds of people that things can be different. And there's so many, we are so used to living in the same pattern every single day, depending on where we are culturally or where we live in the city or the surrounding where our friends. And even if we travel, we still have like those, paths that we're kind of used to. I want to be remembered as an artist who introduce different perspectives and not just something that you can, you've watched this, like, oh, cool, they live this way in Iceland. Or here's like a story about someone's life that he went through that, but actually leave behind something that people can just be like, oh, she tried to show different perspectives and get people outside of their box, outside of their set mindset. I don't know if that makes sense, but
no, it does. No, absolutely.
On a deeper level, that's what I really want to do, because me, myself, being a person who comes from a different culture coming here, I kind of already do that. There's a lot of things that I do that people are like, what are you doing? And I say, this is how we live over there. This is how we communicate over there. This is, and we're not going to go into politics and all this stuff, but that's another big aspect of it, because a lot of people don't know what's going on over there. They only assume, based on films that, especially in the 90s, a lot of American films introduced Russians as these evil guys,
What? Like, did we do that?
It's understandable why, but I feel there's so much being left out. And when people say like, oh, there's not much to talk about or maybe discover about the Russian culture, I'm always like, wait, there's so much, especially like, for example, our stories, telling Nick the other day, I was like, we had these animations animated films created by the Russian animation studio during the Soviet times, that if you watch them, they're so deep and philosophical and weird. And Nick's like, no wonder you like to, talk about philosophy and all this weird stuff. Because we have like this animation called the Hedgehog in the Fog. It's the weirdest, creepiest thing ever. But everyone in Russia has watched it who grew up even today, like they still show it to their kids because it is so full of like, it's like kind of like the Little Prince. Do you know the
Le Petit Prince? Yeah.
Le Petit Prince, yes. So it's like, it's a fairy tale. It's a story, but it has so much wisdom in it. So we have similar stories that have never been talked about or shown or experienced. So I think, just introducing something that makes people feel like, oh, there's a lot that I don't know. And maybe this is also okay. And this is also interesting. Would be something that I want to be remembered for.
That's great. I love that. Xenia LeBlanc.
Yes. Yes.
The short film, The Exposed. Where can we catch this next?
So it's going to be available on YouTube starting tonight, actually. Oh,
all right. So now I'll put a link in the description for it.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So we had a great festival run. It was people freaked out so much. It was like screened at the midnight series. people watched it and there was some really cool, you know, it's like for a filmmaker or storyteller to hear these reactions. There's somebody who literally screamed and I was like, okay, this is great. So I'm excited for people to be able to watch it as well at home and don't watch it at night. It gets a little scary. Yeah.
Agreed. Agreed. Watch during the day.
Yes.
And then you could just spend your day freaked out.
Yep.
So, yeah. And that was the interview. Yeah, that was great, right? I told you. You can count on me when I tell you that we got a good interview. We do. Here it is. So I think you should check out the film. If you have not checked out the film yet, please do. Let me know in the comments what you thought. And if you like this episode, please make sure you hit like, go subscribe, and follow the podcast so you'll know right away the next time a fun interview's dropped. I got a lot of exciting ones coming up for you, so I want you to be notified and listen to it. So until next time, I want to thank you for keeping it Black and a Half, and thank you for watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play to rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it, or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me, don't make a difference, love. You're home. Watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. Yeah. So go on and press play to rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded. But the film, if it didn't hit, no, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas. Yeah.